Well, the name of this, I think, is Discipleship in the Church. Is that right? Something like that. You know, the only way I told John I could do this and Peter I could do this, I said, really, you know, I'd have to go back and talk about what Gene Ward did with me. Because years ago, when I started going to Nichols Hills Baptist Church, I'd grown up in a family where my father was in church work and been in church all my life, man. I made all the big five, you know. And so we moved up here to Oklahoma City and got in Gene Ward's class. And, you know, he had a way of really asking you questions. If you ever sat down with Gene, man, he could really drill down to you. And so, you know, I was a fake it till I can make it type guy, you know. I had all the gold bracelets and I was a salesman and I was trying to do all the things, and so I drove a Lincoln, and I did all those type things. And so Gene, one Sunday, he said, Virg, why don't you read 1 Corinthians for, or 1 Chronicles for us? So, you know, I turned to 1 Corinthians and read, and I wasn't sure where he's talking about, you know, but I got the first C there, and so I read it, after that, he said, Virg, you don't spend a lot of time in the book, do you? No, I said, oh, I read it occasionally on Sunday when people like you call on me. He said, I see. You know how he'd do his hand there? He said, I see. So, you know, a few weeks later, he said, why don't you come by and show me what you're selling? I might be interested. I thought, man, that old boy's got some money. I think I'll go see if I can get a little bit of it. You know, so little did I know. As I walked into his office that day, I said, I'm here to see Gene Ward. And they said, well, who are you? And I said, Virgil Coffey. So you can have a seat over there. And so I sat down for a few minutes. And pretty soon Gene said, well, come on back, Virg. I said, how you doing? I said, doing good. And what are you doing? I said, well, I came by to show you what I'm selling. And he said, well, tell me about it. I sat down there back desk of his. He had his attaché case and a .45 inside that attaché case. And it was loaded. Now, if that doesn't make you uncomfortable when you go in to sell somebody something, you better think again, you know. So he had to tell me all about that .45 and why he carried that .45 and everything. So I went ahead and strapped it on him and closed him four, five, six times. And he said, well, let me think about it. And I closed him a couple more times. He said, well, let me get old John in here. So he went and got John repass, and they were kind of talking. And then, so he turned to me and he said, Virg, what's Jesus said to you lately? I said, well, Gene, I hadn't seen him run around town a whole lot. You know, we hadn't had a lot of conversations. He said, I see. Same thing he said when I read that verse. So he turned to repass. He said, John, what's Jesus said to you lately? He said, well, just this morning when I was reading, and he began to talk about what he had been reading in his quiet time, he said, you know, Jesus talked to me about this. And I thought, man, these guys are weird, you know. They think they're talking to Jesus, you know. And here they are, Christian businessmen. I came here to sell them, and man, all of a sudden they're quoting Scripture. Hour later, man, I can't hardly wait to get out of there. I didn't care whether I sold him anything or not, you know. But, man, these guys were fanatics. And so I continued to go to church there and look at Gene's life and watch him. And, you know, I just kind of looked at Christianity as that's something you do on Sunday and the rest of the week. And, you know, you do whatever you need to do to make a living. So that's kind of the way I lived. And so Gene, he invited Linda and I to his house, and he'd have speakers like Max Barnett and people from all over the world, man. And I mean, you know, they'd just convict you to death about your life, what you weren't doing and what you ought to be doing. And then he said, Virg, you know, you ought to think about supporting some of these people. I said, are you crazy? I'm just barely making it now, Gene. I can't tithe and give people. He said, well, just think about it. Pray about it, Virg. That's all I want you to do. So he kept introducing us to people like that. So in the early 70s, he said, Virg, how would you like to be in a Bible study? And I was really starting to watch Gene and his walk and the difference in him and other business people. And I said, I think I'd be interested in it. And he said, well, let me tell you the rules first. He said, we meet 6 o'clock every Saturday morning. You got to be there every Saturday. There's no excused absences. And you got to memorize a verse a week. And you got to start a spiritual notebook. That's what I give out to you guys. You got to get you a spiritual notebook, and you got to have a prayer notebook. And he didn't give me one, and we had to work up our own from what we were learning from Gene. And I said, yeah, I'll do that. And so in the early 70s, I started being in Gene's Bible study. And little by little, you know, as he thought he could, he had a phrase he wanted to hook them up short. He said it's kind of like stretching a rubber band. When he thought you was almost ready to do something, he'd tell you you ought to do something. So he told me one time, he said, Virg, I think you ought to teach a couple's Bible study. And I said, man, I never have taught a Bible study. He said, I don't care. He said, here's some names. Call them and invite them. And here's the book I want you to teach. So sure enough, I called him, and people came. We had Bible study in our home. A few years later, he said, Virg, I think you ought to start teaching Sunday school. I said, man, Gene, that's an every-week deal, 52 weeks a year. I don't know if I can do that. And he said, yeah, I think you can do that. And so every time, Gene would just continue to give you just a little bit more to do. And so, you know, one of the things that Gene taught, and it's what all of you see here, but, you know, he wanted everybody to first get a really good grip of the Word. You know, he said, Virg, everything that you're going to experience in life, you can do it one of two ways. You can either experience by going through it, or you can read God's Word and read how somebody else went through it, and that'll help you with it. And one of the things that I want to kind of start off with here is to give out a spiritual IQ test. Now, normally we have to grade this on the curve. Everybody take one of these. I'll pass them back. We normally have to grade on the curve, but now since we're here with a bunch of navigators, I figure y'all all score a perfect score. And a perfect score is like 210, okay? Now, old Mac Dahl back here, he may do it. He may score 210. Now, this is not an open book test, so don't crack your Bible here. And I'm gonna. Don't look at them yet, and don't start filling out the answers. What we want to do is just take a few seconds and answer these. Now, these are all books in the Bibles that you've all studied about and all heard about. So, does everybody have one? Don't be studying it. Y'all are getting ahead of the game here now. Don't be looking. Some of y'all are getting ahead. And don't share your ignorance. Look at your neighbor. They may get you in trouble, you know. We can't do that. All right. The first story, if you look down there, is Noah and the flood. Now, you get 20 points for the chapter and 10 for the book, okay? All right. So where is Noah and the flood found? Write that down. I did give you all the blank ones, not the one with the answers, didn't I? I've got one with the answers here later on. All right, now, next one's Ten Commandments. Now, that's found two places. Either one will work. What's the book? And what's the chapter? The book and the chapter. All right. Next one, we've all heard that good old story about David and Goliath. Now write down where David and Goliath found, what book it's in, and what chapter. Some of y'all have blank looks on your face. I'm getting worried here. Some of y'all are writing. Y'all may do pretty good. The next one, Stephen being stoned. Stephen being stoned. Next one, woman at the well. book and chapter. Next one, woman at the well. Woman at the well. That's where Jesus met the woman at the well. Next one, Samson and Delilah. Book and chapter.
We need the verse.
Don't have to know the verse. We're going to let y'all. I didn't add that third column there. I thought that might be a little hard for you. All right. And last one is Gideon and 300 men. All right. Now remember, you're going to get 10 points for the book. And you're going to get 20 for the chapter. All right. Where was Noah and the flood found? Genesis. What chapter? Got close. 7 and 8. All right. 10 commandments found 2 places. Exodus what? It's Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 4 and 5. David and Goliath. 1 Samuel 17. Stephen being stoned. Acts 7. Man, we're going to have some big scores here. Woman at the well. John 4. Have you taken this test before, Kirk? Not in a long time, huh? Samson, no, you got to get the book. The chapter's no good without the book. I hate to tell you that. Nice try back there. I got pretty good ears, you just noticed, didn't you? All right, Samson and Delilah. Judges 16. That's atom bombs and horseshoes or something like that. Gideon and 300 men. Judges 7 and 8. All right, now total up your score there. Now, we're not going to ask anybody to share your score. This is just for you to keep yourself. Huh? You get 10 for the book and 20 for the chapter.
Can we make it the other way around?
Now, I gave this to Kirk's brother-in-law the other day, and he scored 30. And we had a salesman who is wilder than a March hare, chases women, but claims he used to be a preacher, and he scored 110. Now, David was embarrassed, let me tell you, your brother-in-law. So we still have to grade on the curve. Perfect score if you made 100, like in class, the way they grade them in school. You have a possibility of 210 points. But we grade on the curve. As you can see, 0 to 25 is a spiritual idiot. To 50 is an imbecile. To 75 is a moron. To 95, you're mentally handicapped. To 105, you're below average. 115, you're average. And then this salesman, who I never thought had cracked a book, he was outstanding there, see, almost. And then to 135, you're a genius. And it's only possible to get 210. Nobody ever does. So, anybody get a 210? All right. Well, the reason we did that is to kind of look at and see how good a grip really you and I have on the Word of God. Do we still have some work to do, you think? Huh? And you know, if you'll look at the tabs there that I gave you is... You'll see that the first thing we've got there is the hand. And as you begin to work with people in your church, you know, I would encourage you to get them to get a Bible that they enjoy reading. And you might, I put in front of my boys' Bibles and anybody I worked with personally, I wrote in the front of the Bible when I'd give it to them, and I'd usually buy it and give it to them when I do this. This book will keep you from sin. or sin will keep you from this book. And that's really true in my life. I know that just, you can't do one or the other. It's just that way. If you stay in the book, you're going to stay free from sin. If you don't, you're going to creep right back into sin. I don't care what happens. And so, you know, help them get a Bible and encourage them to, have intake a lot of different ways. And the first section you'll see there, it talks about 2 Timothy 3:16. Anybody know that verse? Want to share it with us? If you don't, read it right there for us, somebody.
Huh?
Okay. So, if you listen to John Crawford, J.B. Phillip, he says the Scriptures are the comprehensive equipment of the man of God and fit him fully for all branches of his work, out of J.B. Phillips. And, you know, that's a pretty big statement. That I don't care what I'm doing, that it's going to fit me fully for all branches of my work. So I think it's important that we help people that we're with and that we continue to work on getting a better grasp of the Word of God. Spend time in it. You know, I have a lake house and I loan it to missionaries and people to go up there. And Max Barnett, he says, you know, I just love to sit on your back porch and read the Bible. You know, and I thought, man, I wished I just loved sitting on the back porch and reading the Bible. I'm thinking about fishing when I look out there at that lake, you know. And I'm wondering if they're catching any and I'm wondering if they're biting. But all he could think about was just intake the Word of God. And so, you know, I got a lot of work to do to get that. I ran into Max in the airport one time and he was over there reading the Bible and I kicked him on the foot and I said, you don't believe that junk, do you? And he kind of looked up and he said, oh, Virgil. But you know, he's reading the Bible every time I turn around, man. And when he quotes Scripture, man, it comes from the heart. It's, you know, when I quote it, that's kind of a struggle. You know, I'm thinking, did I get that right? Did I miss that or whatever? And so, you know, help them find ways to get in the Word. And then the next part is just here. I encourage the guys I work with. I kind of like guys like J. Vernon McGee. Any of y'all ever heard J. Vernon McGee?
Yeah.
Man, I love reading his commentaries. I love listening to J. Vernon McGee.
He's better since he died.
And one of our youth directors one time, we were having a youth deal up at the lake, and old Eddie Helker came up and he said, Virg, I heard a new preacher today. And he's really good. You ought to listen to him. I said, what's his name? He said, J. Vernon McGee. I said, he's dead. He said, he is not. I said, he is too. He had to ask, get my wife to tell him he's dead before he'd believe it. But man, this guy's message is still, you listen to him and you'd think he's preaching them live today. And you know, I like Charles Stanley on TV, so I encourage people to listen to Charles Stanley. Church is another way we hear it. We go to Bible studies. That's another way we hear it. And so we're trying to get people to get a better grip on the Word. And all you got to do is take your spiritual IQ test. And as many times as I've taken it, I've never scored 210. So, you know, I'm not sure you're going to ever totally get a grip on the Word unless you're really in it like Max and Gene and some of those are. The next thing that Gene always did, he always had a reading program. He had an Australian reading guide. It's a little blue book. Has any of y'all ever had one of those or seen one? There's three or four of you around. And Gene would give those out. And in this little book, we've got two or three reading guides. But is the reading snowball in there? Bible reading snowball a little?
Yes.
Is it in there?
It's a new reading.
Okay. Our preacher the other day, he's into these snowball deals. He went to that financial seminar, you know, where you can get snowball. What is it?
Dave Ramsey.
Does he have something about snowball getting out of debt or something? Debt snowball. So he got into that, and then he got the giving snowball, where you can add a dollar a week to your giving, and your giving will really increase by the end of the year. So he preached on a giving snowball. And then he said, now some of these Bible reading programs are a little too strict. He said, I've come up with a Bible reading snowball, and He said, what that is, that's just got every book of the Bible and every chapter. And so if you're at church and I preach on a chapter, you read in a part of it, you read the rest of that chapter and you circle it. Or if you're at a Bible study, you do it. Or if you're listening on TV, you circle it. And then occasionally, you know, if you have a quiet time, you can circle it. But he said it's going to be amazing how much quicker you get through the Bible rather than just starting at the beginning and then getting to the end and saying, man, I got six more books to read this month towards the end of the year. But encourage your people to get some type of reading programming. One of the things that I've been doing and helping them in reading is coming up with a simple way, maybe just a devotional book. Jeffrey last year gave me a book by Tony Evans called Time to Get Serious. Best devotional book I've ever been through. If you haven't seen it, you ought to pick it up at a bookstore. It'll change your life. It covers every area of your life, from your marriage right on down to children, right on from A to Z. And so help them get a good reading program. Then next thing Gene did when he got us studying, he made us all buy a Thompson Chain Reference Bible. You know, help equip your guys. If they're going to have to study, help them get some tools where they can study the Bible. And so I encourage the guys I get with to get a good study Bible. And so I kind of encourage them to either get a Thompson Chain at the beginning or a Life Application Bible, something that's got some commentary, something that'll help them, you know, where they can find things that they're looking for, where they can kind of see how the verses are breaking down. Now, a lot of people don't like to study the Bible that way, but, you know, it made it easier for me and it made it more enjoyable for me rather than me just trying to sit there and tear it apart and figure it out myself, because I knew I would never would have got there. And then he had us get a Barclay and a Vine, and, you know, he kept adding to them as we went, and the studies we were in with him got a little tougher. Then he had an outline similar to this one where you would tear down the scripture, you know, observation, interpretation, you know, and do that. And so this is something. Our preacher has been taking books of the Bible and taking this outline right here, and he's been teaching on Wednesday night books of the Bible this way. Where we're at church now, we have a Saturday mornings key men group. And I gave my testimony one year, and they asked me if I'd do the spiritual emphasis. It's the first Saturday of every month. And so we've been kind of implementing some of these things as we're going through the year. And then memorizing the Word and meditating. And then the next thing that I think it's important that you do is that you help your guys when they begin to think about their ministry. What is your ministry? How many of you have thought about it? What is your ministry? Or who is your ministry? And, you know, in thinking about that, I think it's important to have a way you can help them real easily figure out what their spiritual gift is. You know, if you think about spiritual gift, it's, you know, it's prophecy, which is someone that proclaims the truth boldly. It's serving, that's somebody who will meet the practical needs promptly. Teaching, they love studying and they clarify the truth when they teach. Exhortation, they encourage faith in others effectively. Giving, that's somebody that uses their assets wisely. And then ruling is somebody that organizes activities effectively. And then mercy is someone who comforts others compassionately. I had an electrician who worked for me who was an elder in this church, and every time I'd ask him to do something out there when he was working on something, he'd say, mercy, mercy. So I thought my gift was mercy for a while, but found out that it wasn't, and wasn't even close, some of them told me. And then I asked my boys what they thought my spiritual gift was, and they thought it was exhortation. And then I asked some of the guys I was spending time with right now, and they thought it was prophecy. You know, I was too bold in what I was telling them, you know. And other people thought my gift's other thing. But it's not important what other people think your gift is. You know, it's important for you to know what your gift is. And, you know, I went to Gothard years ago. Gene took us all to Gothard. And he said there's basically a motivational gift that motivates you to ministry, to do what you're going to do. And even though any one of these may be your motivation gift, you're going to wind up using all of the gifts in your ministry. And so I'd like to take a few minutes and have everybody fill this out. What you need to do is in every section, and complete from beginning, pick any one, but you got to use all seven numbers, 1 through 7. And then after that, you turn to the back, and whatever's in number 1, you come across here and come all the way across again. And then you total it up, and then these columns will tell you the highest number you have, that's going to be, the lowest number you have is your most likely spiritual gift. Now, one of the reasons you want to do this, if you're discipling in the church, this is something that everybody in the church can give to their pastor, and he's going to know what your gift is. So he can know how you can serve others in the church, if that's your gift. So let's take a minute and fill this out, and then y'all can tell me if you feel like this is what you thought your gift was, or if you think we missed the ball there. Like in group 1, which one's number 1? Number 7 fits you least. Number 1 is fits you the most, in other words. Has anybody finished? You through? Okay, number 1 goes in number 1. Number 2 goes in number 2. This is column 2. See? 7 across, okay. And then 7 across again. I'm sorry. Whatever the number is on the front, they change across. The numbers go 1 through 7 sideways the next time. So fill in your answer from the front going across this way. And then total them up and down. What'd you say yours was, Kirk? Is it?
Yeah.
Kind of like me, huh? Okay, if anybody needs help, raise your hand and we'll try to. You have Jeffrey? Will you kind of help those guys right there on the back row? They got a question. You got yours? Wait. I'll give you another one. Oh, you didn't fill it in? Okay. All right, well, if you're not through, Kirk, you through?
Yeah.
All right, is anybody else through? Kirk, would you stand up and kind of tell us what you learned from this and if you agree with it? And
well, I think I learned I need to slow down a little bit. But, for instance, I know I'm not merciful, and that was at the bottom. My wife would agree with that. I'm not a servant. You would agree with that. Sunday class would agree I'm not a teacher. Giving's probably
See, I could see prophecy and ruling. Knowing you all, as long as I've had, I could see you speak the truth boldly. You don't.
Exhortation's number three.
Anybody else finish? Well, this is a good test. It's not a perfect test. Our pastor designed this for us. And I've taken four different tests, and this one hits me closer than any test I've ever taken. That's why I'm using this test. So it's an excellent test. If you want a blank one, we got some extra blank copies, or we run out. Now, I think it's important if you're working with people for them to know what their gift is, don't you? How many of you would think it's important for you to know your own gift if you're going to minister? And if you're working with people, would it be important to know what their gift is? So we can hook them up where they need to be hooked up. Or as Gene said, you can't hook them up short, you know, if you don't know what you're going to hook them up to, so to speak. Now, what are we trying to help people do in ministry? What's our objective?
Be effective.
Anybody else?
I think one thing is trying to give a vision for ministry. I think a lot of people don't have a clue.
Helping them give a vision for ministry, okay?
First thing is trying to put a foundation in their life and they have something to minister from.
Trying to build a foundation where they can minister from that foundation. Excellent.
Help them understand others.
Help them understand other people. Okay, great.
They do things the way they do versus the way I do it.
Why? And this gifts. We're going to do things different. As Kirk's dad used to say about one of the old motivational speakers, "Vivid the difference." You know, he's talking about men and women. He said, "Thank the Lord, they're different." You know, but you know, people are different, and they come from different gifts. Is why.
Don't learn to do by doing.
Help learn to do by doing. Okay. You know, what do we do with children? Is it any different in ministry than it is in raising children? You know, when we're raising children, we're going to spoon feed them early, aren't we? We're going to change their diapers. We're going to spank them. We're going to focus them. We're going to help them get direction. And ultimately, we want to kick them out of the nest, don't we? Do we want to kick them out of the nest ill-equipped? When we kick them out of the nest, we want them to be mature where they can fully function. They can feed themselves. They can do what they need to do with others, and that they can reproduce, right? Is that any different in ministry? I mean, the techniques are different, you know. Gene, you got me doing Bible studies. Mac Doyle, how many years ago were you in Memorize the Word with me when Gene told me I need to do Memorize the Word because I was doing a lousy job memorizing one time, so I taught Memorize the Word. And I asked old John Crawford, I said, "Is this a pretty good book?" And he said, "It's a good book. Trust me, Virgil." And I said, "Well, how do you know you hadn't looked at it?" And he said, "Just trust me. It's a good book." Helen pulled me aside and says Doss Trotman on it, but John Crawford wrote that Bible study. He knows every word in it. How many years ago were we in Bible study together on Memorize the Word at church? It was in the early 70s, wasn't it? How many times have you taught it since then?
Three times.
And Max reproducing it. Some of his people are reproducing. Is that kind of what we're trying to get? Huh? You know, you can take every one of these topics, and there's Bible studies that we can teach people right in the church, you know. And we could go through others. So we want to help people mature, and we want to help them grow, and we want to help them produce food. And we want to help them where they can teach their people to do the same thing, right? And so that's important. Now, on the next page is discipleship. Down at the bottom, a lot of people can read reading, but very few people can read my writing. So down there at the bottom where it says Matthew 9, 37 and 38, does anybody know that verse? Has anybody got it memorized? Stand up and say it loud. Where are they here? The fans on. All right. And he said labors are fear. L-A-B-O-R-S. It's L-A-B-O-R-S. O-R-E-R-S. If you want to correct that, on the very bottom of your page there under discipleship. And it's not fear, it's few. Laborers are few, not fear. But, you know, how can we help our guys in discipleship? We can do Bible studies with them. We can memorize verses. We can review them with them. We can preach them back and forth to each other. You know, one of the things back on the hand, if you go look at the here area, you know, Gene was big on if you got something out of your quiet time, out of a mission or a message or whatever, to apply something to your life. But then, all week long, share it with somebody every day. You know, that's going to give you an opportunity to share the gospel. And Gene, every time I was ever with him, you know, he never was without the four spiritual laws. Of course, he helped write that, but man, he used that thing. He never was without it. And you know, I traveled all over the country with him, and he would talk to everybody. He was great at bringing up questions. And so when you're discipling people, you know, the with him principle, as he called it, take people with you. Don't just tell them you need to witness. Don't just tell them you need to read the Bible. Don't just tell them you need to do this. Gene did all those things with us before he turned us loose to do them. One time I was heading on the road, and I had a climbing ivy all over one of the houses I lived in, and it was starting to hang down, and it was beautiful, but it was hanging down. My wife wanted it trimmed. So my youngest son, I took him out and showed him how to plug in the trimmer. And I said, do you think you can trim all these vines here? And the ones that are got bigger stalks, use this one. You can just pinch them. And he said, oh, yeah, I think I can do that. So I left and went on the road. And I came home a week later, and that climbing ivy was dead all over my house. I mean, it was dead. There wasn't a green leaf. And Kirk's seen it. It's beautiful when it's green, isn't it, Kirk? I mean, there wasn't a green leaf on my house. And I thought, what in the world has Justin done? Man, I stormed in the house and grabbed him. I said, what in the world did you do? I told you to trim this hedge, and man, you've killed it. What in the world did you do? And about that time, old John was pulling up wanting to talk to me about fishing or something. I don't know what we was going to talk about. And he said, what are you so upset for, Verge? I said, man, he's killed his vine. So he said, well, Dad, I did just what you said. I trimmed it. I went along the base, and I trimmed everywhere there was a stalk. And I cut it, and he had cut every stalk. There wasn't no living stalk. And I was beginning to chew on him, and old John looked at me, and he said, Verge, did we do the with him principle with him on this? You know, no, I hadn't done the with him principle, but I expect him to get it right. And so, you know, when you're working with people, it's good to inspect what you expect, but you got to help them learn to do it before you get there, don't you? And, you know, we got messages online that I hadn't learned out how to do that stuff, but Peter's told me he's going to teach me how. And so I don't have where it is. Peter, where is that found?
DiscipleshipLibrary.com.
And you can go all the way back to Doss Trotman, I understand, and listen to his messages. Is that true? So there's no reason you can't expose your people to some of the real great messages. Gene Wars are still on there. Man, great stuff. Then Gene used to have us keep a prayer notebook. Now, I've kind of incorporated it in this book, a prayer list. But teach your people how to pray. Pray with your people. Pray specifically. You know, I think this last year I've seen more answered prayer off of my prayer list and some of the people I pray with than I've ever seen in my life. You know, there's when I want somebody to pray for me, there's some people I'll call and there's some people I'm not going to call. Have you ever said to somebody, I'll pray for you, that, and next time you think about it and they come up and say, thanks for praying for me, God answered that prayer, and you think, whoa, I hadn't even thought about that since he left. But if we had a notebook, we could write it down. Kind of help us one. You know, another thing that Gene was big on was 10 most wanted list. And if you're discipling somebody, help them put their 10 most wanted list. That's the 10 people that you want to see saved. and you pray for them. And, you know, I can think of people in church that we visited and prayed for, some of the guys in our church, and pretty soon they'd get saved. And, you know, those guys didn't have a clue why they got saved. You know, but if we hadn't been praying for them, I'm convinced they might not still be saved, you know. And then we brought them to church. We had somebody share a testimony. And at the end, they let them hear the sinner's prayer. And they accepted Christ. John Brock came up to me and said, "Virg, we had two people saved in my workshop this morning." Isn't that great? At Key Men, we had people saved. You know, he spoke at our men's group. One guy told me that he nailed down his salvation after that deal. Another guy, I think, may have got saved because his life has changed tremendously since then, just watching him. I don't know that he did, but I have a feeling that he's got a peace now that he didn't have before John shared that with us. And let's flip over to this accountability partner. Our verse that we're using is Proverbs 27:27. It's, "As iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another." Now the living, it says, "As iron sharpens iron, as a friend sharpens another." You know, and that's really what we are, as a friend to the person we're working with, aren't we? You know, and we can help them by doing that. But if you look on the very front of that, you can read this accountability deal a little bit later, but Howard Hendricks says that everybody needs a Paul. What is a Paul? Does anybody know? That's your spiritual leader. How many of you have a Paul? Okay, great. He says everybody needs a Barnabas. Who's a Barnabas? It's like your best friend, your equal, your accountability partner. Stays closer than a brother. And everybody needs a Timothy. Who's a Timothy? Somebody you're helping spiritually. You know, if you look at those and you don't have a Paul and you don't have a Barnabas and you have a, don't have a Timothy, you know, a question you might ask yourself today is, what am I going to do about it? You know, or do I even want a Paul? Do I even want a Barnabas? Do I even want a Timothy? You know, are we so far out of fellowship with God that we're not even interested in it? You know, where are you today? Do you see the need to minister to others, to help others, you know? And then sharing the gospel, there's a little section in here on sharing the gospel, and my printer got it. He couldn't read my writing. And the Roman road is on the back of the first page, of the first part of it. That needs to go in the very back of this section here. So if you've got a copier and can punch holes, you can redo this. This blank page is supposed to be next. But as you go all the way back, then you got the Roman road. The last three verses are on the back of this, so they need to come and be your last page there in your book. Y'all see that? Okay, look under witness, sharing Christ. Look under sharing Christ. On the back of page one in sharing Christ, it says the Roman road. That back page needs to be your last page is all I'm saying. Okay? You with me? Okay. Now, one thing that's important to do, and Gene made us all do, he made us write out our testimony. And if you look at the page that says, writing your own story of faith. Do y'all see that? Everybody see that? It's in that same section of sharing Christ. He had us add, number one is where it says B.C. before Christ. Just put number one there. Number two is about your conversion. Number three is after conversion. And number four is not on there. You need to write that down. What is Christ doing in my life right now? That needs to be the four parts of your testimony. And number four is always changing. One, two, and three are not going to change. But four is going to be continually changing. So as you work with people, help them do this and help them write their testimony. Gene said we needed a 3-minute testimony. We needed a 10-minute testimony. We needed a 30-minute testimony we could preach. And we needed a husband-wife testimony that we could share together in workshops. So I've got all those. If you don't have them, I'd encourage you to get them. And if you're single, you don't need to do that last one. Y'all just do the first group there. But then he always encouraged us to learn how to share the Billy Graham tract. You know, if he would have us ask at the very end of that, has anything like that ever happened to you? And if they say no, and he said, well, let me just share a few steps here that... He said, have you ever heard of Billy Graham? Old Moose Keller, good friend of mine. Have you ever heard of Moose Billy Graham? He'd say, everybody says, oh, yeah, I've heard. Well, let me share what Billy Graham's tract says. And then you just walk them through and turn it upside down and walk them through it and then let them pray the prayer of faith. I'm sure this is a lot. How many were in John Brock's deal? Did he do that today? Huh? You did it in another one? But John Brock did that today. That's his testimony. John Repass did it. Okay? And so, you know, teach your people to do that. You know, have any of us shared the gospel where somebody got saved this year? Don't raise your hand. You know. Have any of us made a meaningful difference in anyone's life this last year because of our ministry? Has anybody we're working with made a meaningful difference in their lives? You know, Linda and I were going to Gene Ward's funeral this year, and Linda turned to me and she said, I wonder where we'd be today if we hadn't met Gene and Irma. And we decided we'd probably be divorced. No doubt in our mind. We were headed that way when we met Gene and Irma. No doubt in our mind with the lifestyle we were living and the things we were doing. You know, old Gene, he knew I was a gambler. He bet me I couldn't read through the Bible the first time. He said, I bet you can't read through it, Coffee. And I said, I bet I can. He said, I bet you can't. And I said, well, I bet I can. He said, how much time do you spend reading the newspaper a day? And I said, well, I usually read it every day, 10, 15 minutes. He said, well, you can't spend that much time in the book. I'll just bet you. Well, I bet I can. So we didn't shake hands, but we made a bet that I couldn't read that Bible. I'd never tried to read through the Bible, never. So I went and I heard that the Living Paraphrase was written for eighth grade mentality. I couldn't read that King Jimmy, no way, no how. So I went and bought this Living Paraphrase. Now, it's a little easier to read. So as I was reading that year, about midway through the year, we lost a child, our third child. I was in Psalms. The day before that happened, I really was convicted to memorize Psalms 50, 14 through 15. It says, what I want from you is your true thanks. I want your promises fulfilled. I want you to trust me in your times of trouble, where I can rescue you and you can give me glory. My wife went into postpartum depression for 6 months. Didn't know what was going on. Went through counseling. I thought about quitting my job. You know, if old Gene hadn't challenged me, I don't know what that would do. Excuse me. But the thing about it, If you get involved in ministry, you're going to make a difference. You're going to change people's lives. And you're going to help them go through the tough times. And you know we're all going to have tough times. Not all easy. I could tell you stories, but I won't. But God is faithful. You know, He'll get you through. One of the deals we passed out on your children. You know, my mother, I know, prayed for me. There's things I used to try to do. I mean, there's things my buddy is doing, and I wanted to do, and I couldn't get there. I couldn't. Something happened to me, they wouldn't take me. Is my mother praying for me, keeping me out of trouble? If you look at that little track, Jeffrey passed this out in Sunday school the other day, and I said, let me have a copy of that. You know, it's 7 tips for prayerful parents. You know, at the beginning it says, do not leave your children unprotected. That is vulnerable to Satan's attacks. The greatest shield of protection we as parents can provide for our children is prayer. Don't wait until you're desperate and left with crisis praying. You know, how many of us have waited to pray for our children? And here's 7 things to pray for your children. If you don't have children, pray for your in-laws. Pray for children in your church. You know, but add this to your prayer list. You know, it'll make a difference. And so, you know, Gene said, you know, if you're going to get involved in discipleship, look for fat people. That's why he picked me. You know, you can tell I'm well fed and I'm pretty fat. But he said that's somebody that's faithful, available, and trainable. You know, they're faithful to come to the Bible study. They're faithful to do the things you ask them to do. They're available to come to the things and be a part of the things you ask them to do. And when you train them and you come back and watch them, you recognize that they're doing the same thing. They didn't reinvent the wheel after you turned them loose. They're still doing the same thing, plowing the same ground, helping the same way. And so, you know, all of these workshops you're seeing here, Gene used to give us all these to do. I will never forget the first workshop Gene gave me to do. He said, Burge, I want you to lead a workshop. And I said, okay. He said, your title, 7 Keys to the Abundant Life. I said, whoa. So, he said, now before you teach it, I have to read your notes and read your handout. Man, I worked like a dog on this. I worked and worked and worked. And I got it all ready. Took it to Gene, showed it to him. He said, that's the worst thing I've ever seen, coffee. He said, go back and try it again. Man, I wanted to deck old Gene. I mean, that got all under my... I said, if that's not good enough, I don't know if I can do it. He said, coffee. I said, go do it again. So I worked another month on this talk, man, and I worked and worked. He looked at it again. He said, that's better, but that's not a whole lot better. He said, go try it again. He tore that thing up twice. Now, the third time, he didn't really like it, but was a week away from the workshop. He said, coffee, that's not a whole lot better, but go ahead and teach it. And I thought, I'll tell you what. I'll teach it, but I'm never teaching another one. That's for sure. So I went and we went over to some church in Midwest City or somewhere, and a group of people about like this right here, and I get up and I'm shaking. I'm nervous. I don't know what I said, and they probably didn't either. Got up then, and one of the guys came up, and he said, that's the first time you've ever done anything like that, isn't it? I said, yeah, but it's going to be the last, too. And I turned around and walked out. And old Gene overheard that. Of course, he didn't let me get away at that. And, you know, next time he gave me one on how to build spiritual principle in my children's lives, because he knew I needed to work on that. Then one time he wasn't going to be able to talk. He made me do his talk, The Role of the Husband. You know, every time he thought I need to work on something, that's a workshop I got. Then how to teach goals. You know, this is what it's all about. Helping people grow. Just passing on what other people passed on to you. And then as far as goals, we'll drip back to it. My philosophy on goals is kind of, I stole some of Gene's stuff here. He used to teach goals fat oats. But I changed it to fat goats, climb poles. But that's faithful, available, and trainable. Goals is goals, objectives, activities, and time frames, and schedule. And pole is planning, organizing, leading, and evaluating. So if you're going to help people, you want to find faithful, available training to help them set their goals. Now, if you look right behind goals, I break goals into, and we're almost through. We'll take questions and let you evaluate and press on here. But I break goals into these areas here. First is spiritual. If you'll look under, in between goals and spiritual, you'll see it. Personal goals, family goals, vocational goals, social goals, and financial goals. And then I encourage people to write down under each one of those their immediate goal. Then their short-range goal. And then their long-range goal. For example, under spiritual, my immediate goal, I want to spend more time reading God's Word. I want to spend more time in prayer. That's one of my immediate goals, maybe. Short range, I want to share the gospel and my testimony with 5 people next month. That might be my short range goal. Long range, I may want to go on a mission trip and take 5 other guys with me. Fish a little while we're in Mexico. No, that last part's not on there. But take 5 guys to Mexico on a mission trip this next year. You know, that could be an example. Family goals, you can write down. Vocational, I'm a peddler. I say I may want to make 5 sales today. I want to be number 1 salesman by the end of the month, you know, is my immediate goal. Long range. Goals are that simple. And you know, the reason I think goals are important, because if you don't know where you're going, you're not going to ever get there. You know, if you don't know where you're going, you don't know how to get there. So, you know, think about having a life notebook, as Gene would call it. I bought one of these a few years ago and tried to make it, and they quit printing it. Nobody ever bought it, so I stole some of their stuff and stole some from some books and tried to get a release on the copyrights, and they said there is no copyright. We quit doing it 3 or 4 years ago. So everything in there is original. I'm just not sure who originated all of it, but if it'll help you, you know, go ahead and use it. Any questions? Yes, sir. Psalms 50, 14 through 15, out of the Living Paraphrase. That's when I was reading that Living Paraphrase. I'm still really reading the Living New Testament. I hadn't got too far away from it. Another hand here a while ago? Yeah. Well, our church is a Bible church. And as I mentioned, we have a Saturday morning, once a month, men's group. And I've been kind of implementing. They asked me to do 30 minutes of spiritual emphasis in that. And this is my second year to do it. And we're working through these things.
Do you have a whole group working through that book?
Well, yes, we're working through it. And then we have some group leaders that we break down into smaller groups. And they work with them on a individual basis also.
How many guys have
gone? Anywhere from 20 to 32 a week.
How big is the church?
Oh, 125 to 150. Tim Lester used to be there, who worked for Gene War, and he really...
What city is that church in?
It's not in the city. It's Houston, but there's not a... It's the only... The church is the only thing left in Houston. There's a cross... It's a country church. It's 12, 15 miles from any city, in every direction. Any other questions? All right, well, I enjoyed sharing with you and hope that you got something that you can take back and use. And I think I'm supposed to tell you, Peter said, to fill out the evaluation.